Hi, I'm Lorraine Raff.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, we welcome the new year by celebrating the one that just passed. We're condensing our shows from 2013 into a half hour of the best of Take Care, vital advice from the leading experts on how to stay healthy and well in the new year and beyond.
2013 marked the debut of Take Care. Our tagline, a conversation on health and wellness, highlights the basic premise that underscores this show. What could we learn if we sat down with some of the world's top authorities in medicine, science, and wellness and asked them for their most essential advice?
We quickly learned that experts who are passionate about their field of study are equally passionate about educating the public. Out of the dozens of guests we spoke to in 2013, we selected 9 experts whose practical advice for improving your health is relatively easy to incorporate.
They explain why even the smallest investment in your health can have huge returns. We begin with Dr. Charles Hennekins, the world's leading authority on aspirin research in cardiovascular health. His discovery of the benefits of a daily aspirin were made during his tenure at Harvard Medical School in 1988. Today, Dr. Hennekins continues his research at Florida Atlantic University. We spoke to him from his office in Boca Raton, Florida.
Would you explain why is aspirin so valuable?
Aspirin really, in some ways, historically, we should remember that it's as old as medicine itself. It really wasn't until 1970 when Sir John Vane demonstrated that small amounts of aspirin inhibited the tendency of platelets in the blood from sticking together. And it was reasoned that by having this remarkable property, it might break the chain of events leading to a heart attack.
When you're talking about a daily dose of aspirin, what is that dose? Give us some numbers.
The early studies in patients who had had a stroke used 1 to 2 grams of aspirin a day and showed benefits. It was then later determined that the lower doses produced the same benefit and looked like the side effects are less. So really, it appears that the best benefit-to-risk ratio for cardiovascular protection is between 81 milligrams of baby aspirin or 325 milligrams of regular commercially available aspirin. So there's no easy answers, and my feeling is if you think you're a candidate for aspirin, see your healthcare provider and let that be a joint decision.
How do you know if you would benefit by taking a daily aspirin?
We do have an epidemic of cardiovascular disease. If you look at the young people today, they're smoking more, they're heavier, they're less physically active, they already have more diabetes. For the first time in 100 years, these will be the first generation since 1950 that have higher risk than their parents did. They need to see their health care provider and make a decision about what's best for them. I'd also like to point out that I don't think we want a society that's living longer like it is today because of better living through chemistry. We have therapeutic lifestyle changes, regular physical activity, a brisk walk 20 minutes a day or every other day, which can be done into the oldest old, will reduce your risk of heart disease 35 to 55%. And that's my plea to the general public to redouble our efforts to try to adopt those therapeutic lifestyle changes that can really not only improve the quantity of your life, but the quality of your life as well.
Dr. Charles Hennekins, thank you so very much for joining us. I appreciate it. We've been told that too much salt is bad for us. But why exactly is that? And what does salt do to the body? Dr. Norman Kaplan is professor of internal medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. His textbook on clinical hypertension has become a medical standard and is in its 10th edition. Why should we limit our intake of salt?
Whether it's called sea salt or kosher salt or whatever name given to it, if it's salt and it's sodium chloride, it's what we're going after. That's the problem. We're eating twice or more the amount of salt than we believe is healthy. And our blood is basically a salt solution. So it expands the amount of fluid within the circulation. And that's like putting too much water into a pipe. the blood pressure obviously goes up when there's too much fluid volume, and that's basically due to the fact that we're taking in so much salt in our diet.
Dr. Kaplan, is this a universal response of most human bodies to salt and sodium? I wonder, is it just salt alone, or is it in combination with other dietary factors?
80% of the sodium that we take into our body comes not at the table when we add it, you know, with a salt shaker, but it's in the foods that have been processed, and we like that taste. And if you've ever gone to a really, really low-sodium diet, it doesn't taste very good for a while. Fortunately, if you do that, your taste sensation will change. So we can adjust our sensation for salt, but it's there.
Dr. Kaplan, how long after modifying the diet and reducing our salt intake should a person with high blood pressure expect to see improvement?
Oh, it takes a while, but I would say usually within a month, you will see a fall in blood pressure.
You talked about processed foods. It's important to eliminate that. Like bread and rolls, I was surprised to find are a high source of sodium.
Oh, yes. It's what we call hidden salt, because you really can't tell it unless you compare it to a very low sodium type of food.
Dr. Norman Kaplan is professor of internal medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center at Dallas. He is also the author of the textbook Kaplan's Clinical Hypertension. The 10th edition was published in 2010, and he's currently working on the 11th edition. Thank you so much, Dr. Kaplan, for your time. If you're not exercising on a regular basis because you don't have the time, listen up. Science shows the first 20 minutes of exercise are the most important, and even 5 minutes can improve your health. Here's New York Times health reporter Gretchen Reynolds.
Why don't you first start by saying, what is the importance of those first 20 minutes of exercise?
Well, it's a very interesting development in exercise science that scientists have found that first 20 minutes of getting up and moving around, particularly if you've been very sedentary, is the most important part of any exercise routine. You actually get most of the health benefits, and that means a reduction in disease risk, an improvement in blood flow to your brain, all sorts of benefits. You get most of those in the first 20 minutes of moving around. You don't have to run a marathon. You just have to get up, move.
A lot of us are office workers. We have a 9-to-5 job. If you have 15 minutes, obviously that's 15 in the first 20, but that will be helpful for prolonging and enhancing our health?
And in fact, they found that getting up and moving for 5 minutes, if you are otherwise sedentary, can actually reduce your risk of dying prematurely. And that includes for people who are overweight. So particularly for people who feel like they can't exercise a lot or they hate the whole idea of exercising, stop thinking of it as exercise. Start thinking of it as movement, as activity, and do it in 5-minute bursts throughout the day. And it will actually make a profound difference in your risk for a variety of diseases, in your mood, and just generally how you feel.
Let's talk about the physiology of being sedentary. What happens to our bodies when we're just sitting still over a number of hours?
What happens when you sit for prolonged periods of time, and that means for more than 20 to 30 minutes at a time, is for one thing, you start producing less of an enzyme that breaks up fat in your bloodstream. You also get a buildup of blood sugar. All you have to do to undo those unhealthy changes, stand up. Stand up about every 20 minutes, it appears.
Gretchen Reynolds, thank you so very much for being part of the show and joining us on Take Care. For most of us, the majority of our waking hours are spent at work. If your job involves workplace stress, knowing how to minimize that stress is critical to staying healthy, both physically and mentally. Jane Pernato-Ehrman is the lead behavioral health specialist at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Lifestyle Medicine in the Wellness Institute. She oversees lifestyle wellness programs for chronic disease and general wellness. There are so many reasons people might be stressed at work, and what makes it even more frustrating is some of it you really can't control. What are some of the most common reasons people are stressed at work, and how does it affect them?
Well, so often it's because there is much less time and fewer people and much more to do. They have greater responsibilities, and they perceive threat that their job is in jeopardy. So all of those kinds of things can certainly impact the level of stress someone is experiencing.
What are some of the ways that might not be the healthiest ways that we cope?
Well, some of the ways that people are coping in unhealthy ways, they're eating foods that are high sugar, high fat, and salty, lots of snacks. They self-medicate, in a sense, to self-soothe through food, alcohol, caffeine. Oftentimes, people come home at the end of the day and they are completely drained and end up on the couch, as I say, mouth-breathing, staring at the screen or on the computer rather than getting up and getting some activity in. And it becomes a cycle this way.
Well, what can we do at the time we feel stressed to lower its impact on us?
The very first thing you can do is to breathe. Our breath is the first thing that goes when we're stressed. We shallow breathe. We hold our breath, especially when we're feeling emotional, to hold down the urge to say what probably wouldn't be appropriate to say, or to hold in the energy of climbing across the table with somebody or the conference room. Our body uses a lot more oxygen when we're stressed. Breathing from the abdomen is the very first convenient, effective, always available, powerful tool that we have at our disposal. The second thing you can do is we're going to have people, places, and things that are triggers to stress. That's just how it is. It's practically biblical. However, you're going to have a physical response to the stress. You are going to tense up a little bit. But you go straight from that to the emotional piece, the story behind that person, place, or thing. Oh, every time Sam comes into a meeting, he always takes us out into left base, and we never get things done, and he's a chatty guy. Every time you do that, you're whipping yourself up into the stress and making it worse. It's like gasoline on the fire. So avoid that. We have no control over the Sams, but we can control our attitude and our response. And so staying in the present helps. Those are some of the first things you can do. Another is to just get up when you can, about every hour and a half, get away from your desk, get away from the cubicle, get away from whatever it is you're working on, and take a quick walk.
It sounds like what you're advocating is breaking a pattern that we may have fallen into in response to stress.
Yes. And the only way to change things is to change the pattern. Calming yourself, practicing those tools, actually helps to rewire your brain for more responsiveness and positivity. But it takes practice. You know, if this were magic, I'd be doing it somewhere else for a lot more money.
What are some of the other things? We talk about leaving the job at the job. I mean, it's so hard. What kind of advice do you offer in that situation?
If at all possible, avoid taking work home with you.
Jane Pernato-Erman is the lead behavioral health specialist at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Lifestyle Medicine in the Wellness Institute. Thank you so much for joining us. So, just to review what we've heard so far, the role of aspirin in cardiac health, the impact of dietary salt on your body, the benefits of regular exercise, and how workplace stress can negatively affect your health. Practical advice from leading health experts.
Coming up, we've got additional tips on maintaining health and wellness. Plus, our guests reveal what they do every day for their own well-being. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.